Hey friends, this is Mike Foster, and this is the Fun Therapy Podcast. And together we're going to dive into the unfair and horribly difficult and messy struggles of our life. And we're going to do it all with a smile because we believe in hope. We believe that our setbacks can become our superpowers. And sometimes all that is holding us together, you and I, is our stories. Chances are that the way that you feel, millions of other people feel that way too. You see, you're not isolated in your sadness or your loneliness or your pain or your fears. No, none of us are alone. I love what the great songwriter Leonard Cohen wrote in his song Anthem. He says, "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." My name is Mike Foster, and this is Fun Therapy. Before we dive in, I want to talk about real quickly a workshop that I'm doing in San Diego. It's called Rescue Academy. It's where I teach you my framework and some of the things that I use in our Fun Therapy sessions. I teach you how to be a better heart handler. It's a two-day workshop, and limit it to about 25 people. It's a very intimate setting where we talk about trauma and identity and addiction and listening skills and how to be more empathetic. And if you're interested in that, you want to improve those skills, or you just want to kind of learn my framework and some of the values and sort of beliefs and some of the tools that I use, rescueacademy.com. You can register at rescueacademy.com. On this episode of Fun Therapy, I'm welcoming my friend, Bianca Juarez Althoff. She is a passionate, self-proclaimed, Jesus-loving, Bible-teaching, book-writing Mexican who loves to help people navigate life and connect people in the community and just live significant, meaningful stories. She is a powerhouse communicator and writer. She's the author of the book Play with Fire, Discovering Fierce Faith, Unquenchable Passion, and A Life-Giving God. In this session of Fun Therapy, Bianca and I have a very, very candid conversation about her relationship with her weight and food, and we discuss the impact of body image on her story. Well, I'm here with my friend Bianca, and I was just telling her how much I loved her name, and it's just a strong name. And one of the things I do love about you, Bianca, is that there's a sense of you're just engaging in life and figuring things out and going for it.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I also imagine there's probably some things, and this is called Fun Therapy, because there's things that are like, well, there's the Bianca that we see and know and who is just like taking on the world, which clearly you are. But then there's probably some things that are a struggle and hurt and maybe feel scary in your life too.
I am so excited because I feel like I get to have free therapy. So it's fun, free therapy. And I'm about that life, Mike. So I want to be an open book. I feel like you have played a part in my life and my story more recently than earlier. And I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for this time. And I hope that our conversation can be as freeing for me as my conversation with you about a year ago.
So I always like to open up with this question. What do you not want to talk about today?
Let's go deep. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that a couple of my triggers would be money, weight, and authenticity. So, and I say those things because those are the things that I felt I lost at a very young age. I grew up poor, and I grew up obese, and I think a lot of my life was spent trying to run away from that and create this false sense of self, if we're getting a little therapeutic in our language. So those are probably the things that I don't like to talk about, but...
Which one do you want to start with?
Probably. Okay, so this is great because just I had a fun, lovely kind of ankle-biting moment this past weekend, and it dealt with my weight. So you had told me that we were going to discuss things that we don't like to talk about, and I don't like to talk about my weight and the struggle that it's been my whole life. Yeah.
What is it about your weight that creates anxiety for you or kind of a resistance to talk about it?
So I used food as like a shield for me. I mentioned I grew up poor, and so I'm first generation American. I grew up in Los Angeles. My dad came to this country at a young age. I am Hispanic, so by default, my thighs will always touch, and I will never have a thigh gap. My mom's Puerto Rican, so we love with food, we celebrate with food, we mourn with food, we're angry with food. Like, it's just part and parcel of our life. And I think it coupled with the fact that I struggled academically, so I couldn't read, write, or spell at the age of 12. And so this was just like a Molotov cocktail of like turning to coping mechanisms. I now have language for, I didn't have then. And I feel like it's something that I can get a handle on, and then without even knowing it, these things kind of creep back up. It's like this never-ending cycle that I just want to break. And instead of, I want to break it for sure, but I'm now learning to embrace the moments when it feels hard. And I think the reason why this is on the forefront of my mind was I travel a lot for work and I am on stage for what I do. I get to tell people about stories of redemption and of hope and of Jesus. And it's an honor and a privilege. At the same time, you're under a microscope. You know, people are looking at you. And I think that people have this coiffed picture of perfection of what, you know, professional Christians should look like. And that's not me. Like, I'm a girl from the ghetto that loves Jesus. Like, that's basically me. But I had shared then that I was constantly compared. I have a twin sister, best friend. I love her to bits and pieces. But I've always compared to her. And especially when it came to my weight. So we both lost a lot of weight. And about 7 years ago, I started a new job. And again, I went back to what it felt like to feel overwhelmed and insecure and inept and unprepared and unqualified. And I exceeded at my job, but I failed at keeping a hold of myself in that moment. And I have put on weight. And I was sharing just a glimpse, like just a little bit of that this past weekend. And then the next day, I'm like on my way back into the conference and a woman stops me. She says, I just have to give you something. And I'm just so excited to share this with you. And she gave me a bag, and inside the bag, it was like diet pills appetite suppressants and all this other stuff. And like, I mean, here's the thing. I know her intent was so good.
So why do you think her intent was so good?
Because she didn't want me to feel, saddened by my weight loss or that I'm out of control with my weight loss. I honestly don't know. I'm giving everyone the benefit of the doubt here because that had to be my reaction, or I'm about to cut somebody, you know?
So this is interesting to me because I find that wholly inappropriate. And yet you're willing to give the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, she doesn't know. Here's the thing. It wasn't my whole message, the whole talk wasn't about my weight. It was actually a story of Jacob and Esau and them being twins and this rivalry that they had. And I said, I am a twin. And though we don't have a massive rivalry, there is comparison that creeps in. And we as humanity can't help but compare. So pride will make you think that you're better and jealousy will make you think that you're less than. And I want to walk in neither. I want to be okay with who I am, even if my thighs touch. And I'm in a fluffier season of my life. The irony, Mike, is that I've been working so hard and, you know, I've always loved to work out. I'm in the gym 5 days a week. I'm eating clean and I've lost some weight. But that gift bag that she gave me with all those diet pills just resurrected the ugly insecurity that resonate that's deep within inside, that it was hard. So I think.
So take me to that moment. Like, what? I know you're putting a positive spin on it, and you're giving her the benefit of the doubt, and you're a positive person. But really, how did that hit you? Like, what flooded you in that moment?
Honestly, I think. You know, my family calls me Pollyanna because I am a positive person. I just want to love people where they're at and, you know, accept them on their journey. When I walked away, I stepped into the bathroom and I just began to cry. Every insecurity that I felt, every pucker of my pants, every weight that I'm carrying. Now, I know that there are some biological stuff that's going on. I'm getting medicine for that, meeting with doctors for that. That's lovely. But it still doesn't take away from the fact, like, I feel not myself. And so I'm stuck in this dichotomy of, like, feeling heavy, so I'm so much, and then feeling so less than and not enough. This dichotomy of being so, like, physically heavy and that emotionally emaciated in that moment. That's what that felt like.
And what is in terms of the emotional part of that for you, what feels empty inside when, and is it just around the weight issue, or are there other things that just feel emotionally emaciated?
Well, I think a lot of what I do is pour out into others, and I love it. I really do feel like this is a call for me. Like, it brings me joy. It brings me life. I think at the same time, if I'm not careful to find health and balance, that's where I begin to feel like not enough. So I do a lot of work within prison ministry and going into prisons and just helping women dream. And so we're coming on the heels of that, and we've faced just so much red tape, so I feel inept there. My husband and I are starting a church in Orange County, California, and we are so passionate and so excited about it. At the same time, it's all this we don't have. You know, we don't have a building. We don't have this huge launch team. We don't have this massive budget. So then there's a little bit of feeling inept there. You know, I love my life. I'm really blessed. But, you know, like, I mean, you know this. I have an amazing house that I rent. I have an amazing car that I lease. I have two awesome kids that are my stepkids. I have an amazing husband. That's not perfect. So I think it's like this low grade, below the line feeling that if gone unchecked, I could begin to tailspin really quick. And so I think that woman's comment about my weight was a trigger. Because on any other day, I love the life that I live. I love what I get to do. I love that I get to pour out into people. But it's just one little chink in the armor that could just get to the heart. And that's what got me.
Just below the surface. Our pain, our insecurities with our weight or how we look, our feeling of being not enough. It always sits just below the surface. I can't imagine that moment for Bianca to be triggered and the pain that must have been felt by this quote-unquote well-meaning woman who delivers a gift bag filled with diet pills and appetite suppressants. It must have hurt in that moment. You know how most of us deal? Our hurt and our pain, we dismiss it. We laugh it away. We put a spin on it or try to be strong in front of others, and then we go cry our eyes out alone in the bathroom. One of the things that is important, and we talk about this more, is just welcoming the pain. By calling things what they truly are is the first step to wholeness. So what really sits below the surface for Bianca?
What do you, in terms of that, the heart, you've used the word inept, or you're leasing something, or it's not really yours, or you don't have the resources. What is it for you, like, if you were to sum that up in one word that you think about yourself? that's below the surface.
The big issue of enough, enoughness, which goes to the food thing. Because when I didn't feel like I was enough, I could control the feeling of enough. If I could make myself full enough, then I'd be enough. If I was heavy enough, you can make fun of me, because as a kid, I wrestled with obesity. It was like my roles on my stomach were a protective guard and armor against mean boys in the playground. And so I feel like now it's this, am I enough? So that conversation was a couple days ago. And I've had time to sit with it. I've had time to, I hate saying this word, but like literally mourn it. Mourn it because it's sad. And then realizing that my enoughness isn't, and I promise I'm not going to the solution. I'm not trying to put a bow on this. But I literally am walking this out daily. Like, I have to know that my enoughness is not dependent on me.
So what happened early on for you, so much of this stuff comes from family of origin and early childhood. Like, what told you that you weren't enough?
Well, I mean, like, just to speak in bullet points, it was growing up in the hood, feeling really unprotected. I remember.
So you didn't feel safe?
Didn't feel safe. I mean, I remember being shot at or in a crossfire at the age of 5. Our house was broken into by hypeds. We've had people break into our backyards, peeping Toms through our windows. Like, so this idea of like not, so definitely not feeling safe. My dad worked several jobs to, you know, put food on the table for the family. And so not feeling like we were going to have enough food, because there would be literal moments where he'd come back and we'd pray, please God, make a miracle happen. Academically, like I shared before, I never felt like I was academically enough, because I was, doctors thought that we were special needs. I say we because I have a twin sister, so that we were special needs. And so that was always a struggle. I'm never feeling, we shopped at thrift stores and bargain bins, like that, never have enough clothes. You can never be cool enough. I mean, for crying out loud, if you're obese, wearing thrift store clothes, and you're homeschooled, like you're never going to be cool enough, right? Yeah. And so this idea of lack and scarcity has permeated and pockmarked my life, which again, I mean, what tethers me is my faith in God and the promise of who he is, because I know that in my lack, that's what I'm holding on to in the midst of this, which is the crisis in the bathroom. I said, listen, I cannot let this. Oh, and side note, I was about to take the stage again just in, 10 minutes before this conversation. So all these things are going through my mind and I'm thinking, you are not skinny enough. You're not tall enough. You're not light enough. You're not white enough. You're not smart enough. You're not funny enough. You're not enough. And then I just had to check myself before I wreck myself and say, okay, let's get a grip.
When you see a picture of yourself, a photo, or see you on your stage, what do you think?
I tend to see my life in like dualities. So on one hand, I'm really, really proud of what I get to do and how I get to pour into people's lives. And that makes me proud. The other side is I don't like looking at myself. I don't like, I go to how did I let it get to this point again? I'm like, and here's the thing, Mike. I am not obese.
And what's the point? What's this point for you?
Like, you've cared about so many other things, but you're not caring about yourself. And that's a lie, because I do. But in my mind and in a culture that's just saturated with an image of perfection and then image management on top of image perfection, it's just too much and I'm not enough. And so it's this.
So do you see, you look at you mentioned the duality, you know, you're proud of what you're doing, but then do you look at that picture and say, I'm overweight?
Oh yeah. Okay. So like if I stand back and look at the picture, I'm like, this is a moment that encapsulates walking in something so awesome and dreaming of people and loving people. The flip side of that is I'm looking at this picture and I see myself and I'm like, you should be embarrassed of how you look. Yeah.
So.
But then I'm so afraid. I'm so afraid to stay there because I wrestled with eating issues my whole life, from anorexia to bulimia to pill popping. I mean, you name it, I did it. I stopped counting. When I was 18, I said, I'm gonna count how many diets I've been on. And I stopped counting after 27. 27 diets by the age of 18? That's ungodly. Like, that's a mess. That is a hot mess. So I'm thinking, I mean, and now I'm 35. I'm gonna be 36. Like, the number's even higher than that. And I'm like, yeah, that makes me sad.
Bianca shares about swimming her whole life in the ideas of lack and scarcity. And she says that she sees her life in duality. She says, I see the things that I'm really proud of. I also see this other side that I'm deeply embarrassed by. When she looks at that photo, she said that she felt embarrassed and not enough. So how do we reconcile these two selves, these two forces, these two things that are warring inside of us? Well, over the years, the only thing that I've found in my own story and when I've been working with others, the only thing that can reconcile these two warring forces that battle for our identity is simply the idea of radical acceptance, of accepting ourselves, fully accepting who we are. You see, we are not two selves. We are one thing, and that one thing actually battles an imposter, a false self, the liar who says that we should be embarrassed about our weight, who says, shame on you for 27 diets by 18. You and I were not meant to be divided. We're meant to be whole. And the pathway to becoming one and becoming whole is through acceptance of every single aspect of who we are.
So you look at the picture of Bianca and you said you felt embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
You feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the theme of not enough.
Mm-hmm.
What for you in terms of your body image and weight, and where is the place, how can you be healthy in that or in that mindset? Or I always say, how do you invite love into that picture for you as you look at that?
Yeah. So I want to be careful that I don't wrap up love with weight loss, because I feel like I have lost a little bit of weight and I'm, you know, like I said, like I was actually feeling kind of proud because I've been so dedicated to this. So that love gift that sweet woman gave me, it cut deep. But I don't want love of self to be equated with weight loss or being good.
Yes.
Or being nice. Like,
yes.
I want to give myself grace and space because I'm afraid of going back to, as much as I was addicted to food, I was addicted to dieting. And I just
don't. What do you mean by
that? So it was like the pendulum swung. So if I, you know, binged on one side, then I would hate myself enough then to withhold food or be really regimented on a diet. Or, I mean, Mike, I'm talking about the Navy diet. I'm talking about the liquid diet. I'm talking about the pills from Mexico that make your hair fall out diet. I'm talking about Atkins, which is a diabolical travesty diet. I'm talking, you know, Whole30, Whole No. Like, I'm talking about like everything. And I just want to get to a place where I'm like, you know what? This is what it is. I'm gonna love myself because I'm taking care of myself. I'm putting good food in. I'm exercising. I'm doing the things that bring me life. That's why I'm gonna love myself. And if a byproduct is weight loss, amen, hallelujah, thank you, Jesus. But that's not it.
So what does that look like? I completely agree with you on that. What does that look like for you?
Let me take you through, let's say it like a day. If I can get up and have a moment of solitude, of meditation, of acknowledging who I am as a person in this journey that I'm on, and then it's coming downstairs and making a great glass of tea, or pressing my own juice, going to the gym, I feel like if I have that in my morning, then I'm loving myself. Mm. And that's literally, it's that gives me a new level of grace for myself. Like, wait a minute, don't hate yourself. You're doing all the right things. You're taking care of yourself. Your self-care is important. Self-care isn't selfish. Just do that. And that has provided a new sense of love and appreciation.
So it's a rhythm of how you start your day.
Yeah.
And really honoring your body, honoring mm-hmm. yourself, honoring mm-hmm. your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just say, I'm going to do something that says, I welcome you, Bianca, to the day.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad you're here.
Yeah.
What does a bad day look like for you in terms of this issue? Obviously, the diet pill thing with that woman obviously
yeah.
is a moment that.
But then there is like responsibility on my part. So then there's like external circumstances and there's internal circumstances and there's external choices and internal choices. So like I couldn't, you know, prevent that lady from that love offering that she gave me. But at the same time, like there are moments.
Well,
you really triggers.
You really do want to put a positive spin on that, don't you?
Well, here's the thing. I legitimately, this is not me being Pollyanna. Like, legitimately, I can't imagine why someone would go out and spend their hard-earned money on appetite suppressants, diet pills, energy pills, and protein packets to spite me. Right? I mean, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. I literally think that her intention was to help. But it's kind of like that. Helping kind of hurt.
But it's not a love offering.
In her mind, do you think? I mean,
I can't get into her mind, but I can only imagine how that hurt.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I think sometimes in life, we do want to put the positive spin on something in that moment so we don't actually have to feel that hurt.
Yeah.
And it's easier to, you know, spin it, silver line it, call it a love offering, laugh about it, whatever it is. But the damage of that and the hurt of that is real.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard just to sit with that and just go.
So can I ask you a question?
Okay.
So let's go down the road of she gave me this gift and it was such a, like, why on earth would you give me this gift? And then I sit with this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the feeling that it resurrects inside. So how do I reconcile that? Like I want to feel pain. And I felt like I did. And I gave myself that space to. But if I continue, I get emotional thinking about it. Because if I continue to stay there, I don't know if it's healthy for me. And I'm afraid of the addictive patterns in my life of anorexia or pill popping, because that's easy. So what do I do?
Well, there's a couple things. I think there is, there's all kinds of coping mechanisms that we use to avoid the core pain that we have, core lie that we believe. And I think, and this is why I'm challenging a little bit on the love offering thing, is because it's a coping mechanism for not having to sit with the reality of the enormity of this for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use humor and stories to deflect, I'm not afraid of the pain. I'm afraid of what sitting in the pain for a long time will do to my soul. Hmm. So I'm choosing to believe the best. And
so what do you believe about pain?
I believe that pain is a gift. Like I honestly say pain is a gift.
Why, if it is a gift, you said that you don't want to sit in the gift.
So think of it like physical therapy. So if I have an issue, so I played soccer for 9 years, my knees are jacked. I tore something, I don't know, some muscle on my knee, and I went in for physical therapy. Now, my physical therapist said, this right now is going to be so good to build muscles around your knee and all this other stuff. At the same time, this prolonged style of treatment would actually do damage to my knee. And when she said that, I realized like, oh, so I think pain shapes us and forms us, and we have to take a reprieve from the pain to see what is normal and what am I feeling. So if I just stay with the pain forever, then I feel like I would really, I don't think that that's the best version of me. I don't even think that's the authentic version, the truest version of me. So I step away from the pain to say, wait a minute, this pain is not going to define me. It's going to shape me and mold me, but I'm not a liquid wax that fits into this mold. It's mm-hmm. got to shape around me. So that's why I don't want to live in that pain.
Yes.
I'm not afraid of the pain. I don't want to live with the pain. And I feel like just it is fresh because it's just a couple of days ago. Yeah.
So how could you there's avoiding pain and then there's welcoming the pain. Mm-hmm. Certainly we don't want to camp in our pain or be defined by our pain mm-hmm. or have our pain, you know, that's sort of the victim mm-hmm. mindset where we're just like, I am my pain.
Right.
But how do you welcome that so you can process that and then transform that? What does that look like for you?
To be honest with you, you are the first person, I'm getting emotional thinking about it, that I've been this honest with. We can talk about stories from like our past or childhood, and then we package it and put a bow on it, and we go to therapy, we go to counseling, but to talk about the now, we dream about the future, we reminisce about the past, but like the now is just really hard. And so the reason why I want to talk about this is because I don't want to forget this pain now. And I firmly believe that if we can own those sad moments of our life, that it allows others to own theirs. And it doesn't have to be perfect or polished or poised or practiced to be shared.
Bianca shares about how she wants to avoid the now. How we can get so excited about the future and we can reminisce about the past, but oh, the present. The now moments. And yet the now is the most powerful moment of your life. It is only in the now where every single option, every single choice is available to you. That's not true about the past or the future. But the now is loaded with opportunity about what we will decide about who we are and what we do and what we believe. And yet so many of us run from the now. The other thing that I think about in terms of what Bianca is sharing is this whole idea of the theology of what is. We just accept what is right now. And if it hurts right now, then it hurts. If it's glorious right now, then it is glorious right now. Whatever today is, whatever this moment might be, we welcome it. It is the theology of what is. And as Bianca says, it doesn't have to be polished or perfect or just fit perfectly into our stories. It's about the theology of what is. It is embracing the now living in the peace of who we are.
I want you to see you the way God sees you, and I see you, and your friends see you, and your husband sees you. But we can't do that for you.
Yeah.
Do you feel the sense of, for you, that, I mean, the early part of your life, you learned how to do life, and there's scarcity and lack of safety and all those things. And it feels like if you are in the present, do you feel scarcity? Do you feel a lack of safety, or just a lack for you? And that's why is like Bianca just being here, and Bianca in the present, and welcoming the pain, welcoming the joy, welcoming the just life into now. Like, what is it that for you, like, why you would resist? Is it the similar things that you don't, do you not feel safe?
I feel safe in this station of my life. I think like this, what this conversation has resurrected is, I'm not too sure I feel safe with myself. So I just don't want to go back to food addictions or dieting addictions. That's a fear. So it's less of a scarcity now and more of like a, I want to fight fear with this sense of faith. Like I know I am enough, not in and of myself, but I know I'm enough because of what I have in my life right now. My faith, my family, my friends. I really do feel a sense of fullness. And that's what I'm going to hold on to in this season. That's what calibrates. That's what kind of grounds me when life gets a little chaotic. But I do feel like I want to fight against the scarcity mentality that I kind of grew up with.
It feels like maybe what happened at that speaking engagement, one of the reasons it was significant for you is that it showed the fragility of all of this. Is that all it takes is one stranger to bring a diet pill or pills, and it's fragile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So are you scared of the fragility of it, and then not being in control of it, and you know, going back to old patterns? I mean, what's the fear there?
You know, I didn't think about that, but yeah, I just, in retrospect, the fragility of this kind of like confidence. I mean, confidence is fragile. Yeah, that was an interesting way to wrap language around it, but I think that's what it revealed. And you know, again, it's not Pollyanna pushing through, but like, the beautiful thing about like having to fight as a kid for safety or territory or whatever, is that you don't have an option to quit. So I can't, and I won't, and I'm still gonna I'm gonna fight against a scarcity mentality, but I'm gonna fight for holding on to what I know to be true. Mike Foster loves me. My husband loves me. Well, you guys love me in way different ways, but but you know, my family loves me. God loves me. My kids love me. Like, that is what I'm looking for, or not, that's what I could have defined as fullness rather than food, money, power, recognition.
Don't quit. Fight for holding on to what you know to be true. That you are loved. And that, my friends, is the fullness of life. I want to thank Bianca for sharing so openly and honestly with us. And I want you to make sure to check out her book, Play with Fire, Discovering Fierce Faith, Unquenchable Passion, and a Life-Giving God. Bianca is an amazing storyteller. She will remind you that God has huge dreams for you. It's a great book. Check it out at Amazon.com. Play with Fire. If you are liking and enjoying and getting something from the Fun Therapy podcast, please make sure to subscribe and to leave a review and a rating on iTunes. Keep telling your friends, like, just copy and paste the link into an email and send it to your top five friends and just tell them you need to listen to this, because that really helps our show, really helps the podcast. We've got some great conversations coming up. Also, if you want to follow me at MikeFoster2000 on Instagram, I encourage you to do that. Let me know what you think about the podcast. Leave a comment or message me on Instagram. That's where I do most of my social media. I'm a little bit on Twitter, a little bit on Facebook. Also, you can hop on over to my website at mikefoster.tv or secondchance.org. And don't forget about rescueacademy.com, my two-day workshop that's coming up. Love for you to join us for that. I want to say thanks to Sleeping at Last for providing the beautiful, epic, heart-moving music for this episode. Ryan, you're incredible. Sleepingatlast.com or go buy his music at iTunes. Okay. Fun Therapy is a proud, proud member of the Relevant Podcast Network. For more shows, I got some really good podcasts coming up. Check out relevantmagazine.com/podcast. And thanks again for listening. Keep the emails and the tweets and the Instagramming and reviews coming. I love it. I listen to it all. I hear it all. I read it all. And remember, no matter what has happened in your story, that your setbacks can become your superpowers. And honesty is always the best policy. We'll see you next time, my friends, on the Fun Therapy Podcast.
Hey there, this is Eddie, host of The New Activist. You know, we created The New Activist podcast to be a place where we can learn from other people who are out in the world, who are going and serving and trying to make a difference in any number of the huge issues that we are staring down today. And what I love about these interviews is not just that we're hearing from amazing people, but also we are learning how we can go and do likewise. I hope that you will join me in listening to and becoming the new activist.